Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your official home for Jaguars football. AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio WOKV. Voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Loggeman. And Jaguars.com senior editor, Vic Ketchman. Break down the last Jaguars game and take a look at the next time we take the field. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Aetna. We want you to know the Jacksonville Transportation Group, the official transportation provider of the Jaguars, and by Prudential Network Realty, extremely full service. Now, to get things started, here's Brian Sexton.
Good evening. Welcome inside Jaguars This Week and WOKV Jaguar Central. I'm used to looking at it ahead of me. Now I got to look over Joe. How are you, Joe? Good. Time for Jaguars This Week, folks. Vic Ketchman's here. How are you, Vic?
Good.
Jeff Loggeman across the table. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Johnny Dineen is here. Join us 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Draft is over with. You know, there's certain, you know, points of the off season that you just you get over and you know what's next. You know, draft, minicamp, OTA, golf camp for Vic, and then training camp is not all that far behind.
No, you get. I know the routine now. There will be 19 consecutive days of work for me before, you know, these guys are out of here, and I got a weekend. That's every year.
Right.
Because you got the draft, mini camp, another week of work, and then you get a weekend.
Right. Kind of rolls
then
out.
Come the OTAs. We get that break for Memorial Weekend. And then the drum roll, big finish for OTAs in June. And then it's vacation time.
Yeah.
And then you know what's after that?
Yeah. The grind. Hey, Jeff.
What's up?
Just looking up at the board.
We weren't even close.
Yeah. Well, rarely are.
No. We didn't have the hits, but we were in the range. If you look at our guys, they are right where they are.
And we did talk about Tyson Jackson going to Kansas City last week on the show, and that became a not very well kept secret.
Terrible pick. Just a terrible, terrible pick. Terrible pick.
I had somebody.
Was he worse than Hayward Bay for the Oakland Raiders?
As bad. This guy, he doesn't make plays. I mean, he's
what's he going to get in guaranteed money?
Big, slow, lazy defensive.
And he's going to get what $27-28 million guaranteed in that third spot.
Oh yeah,
I mean
he's going to make a bunch of money
for a 3-4 defensive end.
That state of Missouri really whiffed.
Oh yeah, the Tyson Jackson and the Jason Smith, both of those guys. We talked about it on Saturday. They were two guys the Jaguars didn't want. And that really helped them down the road when Eugene Monroe was pushed down the board.
I've talked to scouts with half a dozen teams, just shake their head on Tyson Jackson.
What about Jason Smith?
You get it both ways, but no one is gaga about him. What they all say, though, is these tackles nowadays coming out of college football are tough to predict because they're all two-point stance guys. These spread formation offenses, this throw mania has put all these tackles in these two-point, you know, catcher stances, and you don't know if they can run block or not. Eugene Monroe was a two-point stance guy at Virginia. He did put his hand down on the ground every once in a while. They showed that they wanted to run the ball a little bit, but it's a strictly projection with him as a run blocker, and Gene Smith thinks he can be a run blocker because he's got a big bubble.
Now, with these six scouts that you talk to, what's their take on the Jaguars draft?
I'm getting thumbs up all the everywhere. Every guy I've talked to, trying to feel out, you know, I'll call a writer and see if you can poke around with your scouts.
Well, is that based on the first two picks or the whole body?
No, the whole body of work. You know, and I'm not asking them to go through player by player.
But, right.
You know, for instance, call Ed Bouchette. He's got his guys. Ask him what they think. In every case, it comes back thumbs up. You know, real impressed with it. I'm not getting nearly as much Derek Cox and Terrence Knighton concern as we get off the TV.
Well, because the scouts know these guys, and Kuiper and Mayock and those guys may not.
You know what the shame of the pick with Derek Cox is going to be? He's going to have that stigma kind of attached to him. A lot of people don't understand a third-round pick this year is worth a second-round pick next year. It's kind of basically an even trade. Seventh-round pick is a throwaway.
The best example is Jeff Ota. A year ago, Carolina traded with Philadelphia. They took Philadelphia's first-round pick, and they gave the Eagles a motherload of picks. Next year's one, I think a two was in there, a four. I mean, they gave them
a ton. Yeah, because they had to trade back into the second round to take Everett Brown.
Right.
Over the weekend.
Carolina picks Jeff Ota. Had a great year. Now, a year later, knowing what Philadelphia has done with those picks, which is to say a lot, because Philadelphia had a great... Do you think Carolina regrets? No. Mm-hmm. You never regret. Here's another stat. This is an incredible stat. I just got this. This is going to be an ass fic tomorrow. There have been 80 offensive linemen drafted in the first round since the year 2000, since the 2000 draft.
Wow, that's like 8 or 9 a year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Would you care to guess how many of those 80 linemen are still playing in the NFL? 73. I'm surprised you guessed that high.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, if you apply that same standard to wide receivers, you won't get anywhere near 70.
You don't miss. We said it for many years. The big guys, I think, are easier to hit on.
No
Their
question.
Careers last longer.
That's right.
They're easier to figure out.
We're talking about 10-year guys now. Those 2,000 draftees will be in their 10th year, and they're still in the league. If you're going to spend top 10 money, you might as well spend it at a premium position, and your risk is considerably lessened if you spend it on an offensive lineman. And if it's a premium position offensive lineman, clearly it's a left tackle.
Well, you know, the reason that I was surprised by the number 80, I mean, that would be about 9 a year that would have to be drafted in the first round. And you look this year, with all the tackles, there were only 6.
Well, there were 8 offensive tackles picked last year. Tackles.
Yeah, well, that obviously
drives
this year
you got Alex Mack. And Eric Wood. Those are two centers. We don't get that very often.
But no guards taken in the first round. To go
two centers and how many tackles?
Four.
So there was only 6 this year?
Only 6 this year.
Right. That's down.
Yeah.
That's down.
But I think the number just caught me off guard because 9 is almost, it's just a little less than a third of the round. But it tells you.
I wish I had my book. I can go get it out of my office.
Oh, I don't doubt you.
There were 8 tackles last year alone. Tackles. Did we have any guards last year?
In the first round.
Yeah.
Albert. The Virginia guard.
Brendan Albert was a
well, he might have been listed as a guard last year.
He was listed as a guard.
No, he was
I had him as a tackle.
Tackle.
He was one of the 8 tackles.
Yeah, he was predicted as
so a tackle. But you got 10 years and 80 guys, so you're averaging 80 years? Sure, they'll average 80 years. Absolutely. Wow. Look at the year that Gallery was picked. There were a ton of tackles that year, too, or a ton of offensive linemen. You also, Chris Naoli is in those numbers, and he was a guard. Was he picked after 2000?
No, he was.
Naoli was 97.
Oh, okay. Then
he was early.
Yeah, Naoli was the 10th pick of the 97 draft. We got to take a break. Vic and Jeff are with you next. I've got to go do TV on CBS 47. Got a great interview with Fred Taylor talking about Maurice Drew. You guys are back here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Back on Jaguars This Week, this is the Sextonless segment with Loggeman and Ketchman. And Vic, you know, I've had a lot of people this week, and I'm sure you have too. What do you think of the Jaguars draft? And my response to them was, ask me that question in 3 years.
What do you think of it?
I mean, I don't watch enough college football to know. And obviously, if Gene Smith and his crew feel strongly about these people.
They do.
Then I'm all for it. Because and it's funny, because everybody has an opinion about players they never see.
You know, we had a... director of player personnel here some years ago, real good guy, Rick Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, it was the day after the draft. It was the year that they drafted Shelton. Remember the fullback?
Damon Shelton. Rock.
Yes. I only remember...
His nickname was The Rock.
Yeah. I only remember it was that year because we were talking about Shelton at one point in the conversation. But we used to play a little basketball out here in the back at lunchtime. And I can remember being out in a basketball court, and I must have caught Rick at a vulnerable moment. He said to me, "So how do you like the draft?" I said, "Looks good." He said, "You like it, huh?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "It stinks."
Really?
That's when I knew it wasn't a good draft. I mean, when the director, when you get a bad vibe from the mm-hmm. guy who's doing the picking, then you realize they're not satisfied. They're not content. Of course, he was exaggerating his feelings, but he clearly was not satisfied. He was not fulfilled. I could tell from Gene, and I could tell from Terry McDonough, I can tell from Jack Del Rio, that they feel a deep sense of contentment, a deep sense of satisfaction. They got bookend tackles. That is such a beautiful term.
You know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, when you look at this draft class, you know, the first thing that I do is I go back and look at what this team did in its first draft ever.
Mm-hmm.
Bocelli.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was DeMarco, what, two rounds later. And they drafted bookend tackles. Mm-hmm. And Bocelli obviously was, you know, potential Hall of Fame type player. And DeMarco was not.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Schwartz, I believe, was a second round pick that year. James Stewart was also a first round pick that year.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you had a tremendous draft. And so my response to many of the questions was, let's evaluate the 2006 draft, because that's the one that you can really evaluate and say, is it good or is it not, right? 3 years.
You want to do it?
3 years.
Joe, do we have a media guy?
I got it right here. Okay, Jaguars draft from 2006, because that 3 years, mm-hmm. after three seasons completed,
mm-hmm.
you've got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
of how that draft class was.
Let's do it.
First round pick, okay?
Mercedes Lewis. C.
A C. I would agree with that,
mm-hmm.
because he hasn't become a big play receiver yet for the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. If I had to give him two grades, I would give him a B+ as a blocker, and I would give him a C as a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Second round pick, Maurice Drew.
Oh, it's an A. A+.
Yep.
A home run pick.
No question. Third round pick, linebacker, Clint Ingram.
C.
I give it a B, because I think Clint is a legitimate starter in this league.
If he gets back to where he was
2 years ago,
that's right.
Then you would give that an A.
Absolutely.
Last year, a little off, but obviously with what had happened with Richard Collar, his best friend, wasn't so good.
Mm-hmm.
Brent Hawkins. Fifth round pick. Didn't have a fourth round pick.
Yeah, they shouldn't have cut him.
He has some issues now.
Yeah, I don't think they should have cut him.
Seventh round pick, James Wyche.
I mean, these
sticking
picks.
Sticking around.
These, you can't call them Fs, but they're not with the team, so they're failed picks. These are failed mm-hmm. picks.
Overall.
You didn't get enough. Wyche didn't. He was always hurt, so therefore you didn't get enough out of him when he was with you. That makes it a failed pick. If that's an F, it's an F. Brent Hawkins, they had much greater expectations. He gave them a sack or two at a critical time mm-hmm. in 07,
Philadelphia,
I believe.
At Philly, he had a big sack.
Okay, and I think he had one in Pittsburgh, too, in that playoff game. So he gets something between his, you know, he gets a C- or a D+.
Yeah.
I think their expectations were much higher, so I can't give him just a C. It's got to be a little below that.
So, but overall,
mm-hmm.
what would you give that draft class? Assign a grade to that draft class of Mercedes Lewis, Maurice Drew, Clint Ingram, mm-hmm. Brent Hawkins, and James Wyche.
Well, first of all, you grade it down because it's only a 6-man class. That mm-hmm. that's not good. And let's not forget, D. Webb was in that class, and that was a pick that shouldn't have been made. There was trouble at Florida with a gun. And this team was going through some issues at that time. I don't like that pick. That's a C-. Maurice Jones-Drew saves it.
I think Maurice Drew and Clint Ingram do.
Right. Maurice makes it a C at worst, because he is a long-term face of the franchise player.
B-.
You're being generous.
No, I don't think so.
But you're okay. I'll give it a C.
If all of a sudden Mercedes Lewis continues along the trail that he's on, I think he's improving,
then it becomes a B.
then I think it becomes possibly a B plus. I mean, you're talking about Pro Bowl caliber running back, starting caliber linebacker, and who I think is when he gets into the lineup as a regular starter and he returns to what he was 2 years ago. Clint Ingram is a ferocious linebacker. Mm-hmm. I think with him and Maurice, obviously, it would push the grade up to a BB plus.
Now I'm looking at that. It was the 1997 draft to which I alluded. You know, the one with Damon Shelton in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go through these. Ronaldo Wynn, first round pick. I think he's still in the league.
Yeah, capable, good player.
Not
a great player.
Yeah,
good player.
He's been a B minus player, hasn't he?
B.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not a B minus player.
Mike Logan had some years in Pittsburgh where they did some things with him.
It was okay.
But
B minus.
Okay. James Hamilton was a raging bust.
Bust.
Seth Payne was a very good player.
Very
for this
good player.
Team. B players, mm-hmm. Clearly a B player.
B plus, because of the round he was drafted in, B plus.
Damon Jones, I don't know, what do you want to do there?
Sofa?
Yeah.
C minus.
Okay. And then Damon Shelton, they got something out of him.
B plus for the round he was picked in.
Okay. And then the last guy was a John Hess, which he never materializes.
He was a special teams pick, and he was a bust.
So what do you give that, Jeff? C plus?
B minus, C plus, somewhere right in
there. So there's a case of the director hated his the day after his draft. He hated his draft, and in looking back on it, it
turned
was okay.
Out okay.
It turned out okay.
Turned out okay.
That which only goes to prove that nobody knows what's going to happen with these things.
Nope. Now that's why I wanted to go back because when I was asked that question, I was at a home improvement store.
Okay, let me give you one more.
The guy said, "Hey, what do you think of the draft?"
Well, while we're at it, let's do 05.
2005.
Matt Jones.
F.
Khalif Barnes.
C minus.
Scott Starks.
B plus.
Absolutely. Alvin Pearman.
B minus.
I mean, you know.
He got hurt.
Gerald Sensabaugh.
For the round he was picked in.
Five.
B minus.
Chad Owens.
B, you know. Chad Owens was a disappointment.
Pat Thomas, I thought he was going to be a player for him.
Nope. Couldn't stay healthy.
And Chris Roberson, which was that one didn't work either.
No.
So, I mean, you got pretty much there. You got a CD.
C minus. Yeah. C minus class. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we've always talked about 3 years. And it's interesting because every publication, newspapers, internet websites, they always want to assign a grade to the picks and they want to assign an overall grade to the draft class. Mm-hmm. What they should be doing is going back and evaluating the class from 3 years ago.
You're absolutely right.
Instead of trying to assign a grade to these players now. And it's interesting to me because everybody was somewhat critical of the Jaguars' second day picks. They wanted to talk about trading a future number two and a seven to get the corner Derek Cox. And then for some reason they're critical of Terrence Knighton.
Let me tell you the story.
Of all the people that are critical, how many people watch the game at Temple?
Let me tell you the story about Knighton to help out here. You're talking about a guy who played every down for Temple. He was in every game for every down. Probably 40% of the downs at Temple are after the fact. The game is over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Score's lopsided. What do players do when the score is lopsided? They ease up. They start to take plays off, right? So it depends on where do you want to view this guy. You know what I mean? You put on the tape, you better, and if you're watching after the fact, he's not going to look so good. You see what I'm getting at
here? Was Temple that good or was Temple that bad?
No, 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 no. They were not blowing teams out, Jeff.
That's why I asked that.
No. It's the other way. Better than they had been back when they were in the Big East, but they tend to, you know, a lot of games tend to be lopsided.
All right, well, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue talking about the Jaguars draft class and the upcoming minicamp right here on Jaguars This Week.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Here we go, second half hour of Jaguars This Week. Go to 7 o'clock here on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Hey, Brian, yeah. I owe Temple an apology.
Temple?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mocked them.
When?
While you were gone.
What did you say? Yeah.
I checked their scores for the last 2 years. In the conference, they were very competitive. They did very well. It was only when they stepped out of the conference that they had a couple hammer jobs. Penn State tattooed them a couple times, and I think Army got them or something like that. But in the conference, they were very competitive, so I apologize.
Was this the highest drafted Owl since Paul Palmer was drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs back in the 80s?
Joe Klecko was a pretty good player.
Well, I was talking about the 80s, though. I mean, Klecko goes to the 70s, so.
And he was a lineman, you know. how about, wasn't there a linebacker, Johnston, yeah, from Temple, was he not?
Third round or higher?
A first round pick, Raiders. Check a guy named
Lance Johnstone?
Yeah.
The defensive end?
Yeah.
Is he a Temple guy?
That's right.
He's been with the Vikings for a couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, he was a first round pick, I believe, of the Raiders. He was a Temple guy.
Sure.
No, they've turned out players. I've covered them. I'm trying to think of the top guys. Klecko is. And Johnstone,
the stands out the most. Grab a couple phone calls. Tim is on the south side. He's been holding. Hello, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to get your take on the receivers that they drafted. I thought it was interesting. Philosophically, there was quite a difference in the physical specimen status of these guys and the fact that how they contrasted with a Matt Jones and a Reggie Williams, and the fact that the guys that they picked were small, they're fast, they're quick. They've got stats to back it up, and you know, that just seemed to me like a big shift in philosophy, and it's something that I was easy to sign on to. Wanted to know what you heard about these guys from a college standpoint, because being an SEC country, you don't get to see much of those guys play, but wanted to get your feelings on their, what you think of their potential.
Mike Thomas is the Pac-10's all-time leading receiver, and when you look at the receivers who have come out of there, that's an esteemed list.
Big numbers.
And Dillard from Rice, by 10 touchdowns, owns the record for most career receiving touchdowns in the NCAA. So they're highly productive guys.
Only Thomas is small. The other two guys are nice-sized. I've already had...
Dillard's 5'10", right?
I think he's a 5'11", pushing 6-foot guy.
Okay.
Hey, I'll tell you this. The head coach today, Jack Del Rio, compared Dillard to Keenan McCardell. Now, the other guy, Tyquan Underwood, is a tall, slender receiver. When you see him, you're not going to see short.
John Broussard.
No. This guy is much more physical.
Slender.
Slender, but Broussard was like a 5'11", 5'10" guy, right?
Yeah,
this is a 6'2" player. This is a guy... This guy's going to remind you of Antonio Bryant.
Okay.
Not that thick, but that big. And it's a tall, fast receiver. This guy lives on the boundary.
They've all got good speed. I mean, if you look at their 40 times, all three of the drafted wide receivers all have speed.
How about 4.29? This guy ran 4.29. You're going to be knocked out by Tyquan Underwood. He's going to be the guy from this weekend you're going to remember, because he's going to show speed that this team doesn't have.
355-NFL-1. Tim, hope we answered your question. We'll go along. John is in Middlebrook. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and really enjoy y'all's show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm real happy with the number one pick and the overall draft the Jaguars did. I think it's one of the better ones they've had. And finally, I've been calling it for the number one pick being an offensive lineman, tackle, since Leftwich was in his last year here. And Logman, I have to take issue with you. I think last year, pre-draft, you were wanting a wide receiver with everybody else. Seem like I'm the only one in my network that I've got all my sports fans and friends. I was calling for an offensive lineman.
Well, let me back up. There has never been a time where Jeff has ever advocated taking a wide receiver in the first round. He's a big guy all the way.
Yeah, I'm a big believer, John, in big guys. I just think you can get skill position players later on.
I stunk out the joint last
year. Also, I wanted to bring in with that is the rhetoric I've heard from Jacksonville. Officials, they get the best player. And look at the Pittsburgh Steelers to do the opposite. They get what they need. And you just mentioned earlier in the last segment about Philadelphia getting a whole bunch from Carolina. And I think you can be wise if this is a hybrid. But concentrate at the first aspects of the draft and what you desperately need as a team.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I gotta I'm going to, since you took issue with Jeff, I'm going to take issue with you. Did the Steelers need Rashard Mendenhall last year?
No.
Did they need an offensive lineman last year?
Oh, in a big way.
Did they draft one?
Nope.
The first offensive lineman the Steelers drafted last year was in the fourth round, a guy named Tony Hills from Texas, who was making the move from tight end to tackle. He probably will never play for them. He was just a project, although they do tend to stick with guys. They are very big on player development.
How many offensive linemen did they take in this year's draft?
Craig Irby.
I think it was one.
One from Wisconsin. No, they took also A.Q. Shipley, great pick in the seventh round, center, who's gonna be their center for a long term. But the Steelers are very, very clearly one of the best available player pickers, have been for eons.
And this team has always, in the first round, been a need-based team. Terry McDonough said that at the draft luncheon more than a week ago. So, John, you got your teams mixed up a little bit there. But we appreciate your phone call from Middleburg. Keep listening. 355-NFL-1. Mike down the road in Palm Coast has a thought on the draft. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I really enjoy the show. Just got a quick question. I'm a big FSU fan, and I was really pulling for Everett Brown in the draft and would love to see him come to Jacksonville. And I know he went to Carolina after our pick, and I just wanted to know, was he ever under any serious consideration from the Jaguars? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank
I can't
you.
Imagine how he would be after two defensive ends in the first two rounds.
He has to play in a 3-4, so he was of no consideration for the Jaguars. Has to play in a 3-4.
Yeah. And
where did he go?
Carolina.
Did they play 3-4?
No.
He's got problems. Where's he going to play for?
Well, they envision him as being a
Quentin
right
Gross.
End to finally supplant Mike Rucker, who was a very good player for quite a few years for Carolina.
Everett Brown is from Fayetteville. All right, so he's got that going for
yes.
him. He's back home. He's going to be a Quentin Groves. He's going to be a part-time guy. He's going to be a pass rush specialist. It's unfortunate that he didn't go to a Patriots, a Chargers, a Steelers, a 3-4 team, because he would have been much better off as a rush backer. But the fact that a 3-4 team didn't jump up and get him, what's that say?
Maybe they didn't think he was that good.
And apparently, the San Diego Chargers took
Larry English
from
Northern Illinois.
And had a chance to take Everett Brown.
Larry English is the perfect 3-4 rush backer.
So he's going to be the opposite to Sean Merriman.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen.
And they've got a pretty good one already.
In Sean Phillips.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Chargers are going to be devastating. Their pass rush is going to be devastating.
Let's take our final break of the evening. We'll come back with another segment of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
10 minutes left in the show this evening. Folks, you can join us, 355-NFL-1, to be a part of Jaguars This Week here on News Talk Radio, WOKV, 355-6351. Let's grab Brandon, joining us from the South Side. Again, the draft, the topic. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, guys. Hey, two things I wanted to really point out on this draft that really kind of impressed me and showed me what they're looking for is they're all captains. They're all respected teammates. They all they want to play football and not go out clubbing. You know, they're all going to be a student of the craft and really, really almost like a workaholic. And second, the two receivers, I know you were talking about Taquan Underwood. He's very, very fast. They all have verticals, either 41 to 44-inch verticals, and they can make separation. So instead of having big, tall targets, the quarterback could throw to, they're going to be wide open, and Garrard could throw them a lot easier.
Brandon, the first point you made was your best point, and that this is a very clean draft. I mean, it doesn't get any cleaner. I mean, is there any one player that has an issue, a question with character?
Mm-mm.
I mean, none. And
except Eben Britton.
His interview was a little entertaining there.
We'll forgive him this once. You know, it was a happy day.
When you're a second round pick, the anger, I don't get the anger.
Yeah.
I've got a chip. They're all going to pay.
Sometimes,
I like it. Sounds like a right tackle to me, baby.
Sometimes
that sounded like me when I was about 21 years old and I'd been at a keg party.
Sometimes when I go out on the...
Where he even was.
Sometimes after I've been out on the back porch, I got a chip on my shoulder, too.
The chip is named Glenn.
I come in and she says, "So what are you angry about?" I don't know. Hey, here's a good one. If Jared Dillard had Tyquan Underwood's size and speed, or if Tyquan Underwood had Jared Dillard's numbers, they'd both be first-round picks.
Oh, it sounds like if you put Tyquan Underwood and Jared Dillard together, you're talking about a top-five pick. You're Larry Fitzgerald-esque.
I mean, and the same thing with Mike Thomas. If you gave Mike Thomas Tyquan Underwood's height, he'd be a first-round pick.
All right, so how much better is this receiving core in total with the addition of these three young men?
Fixed.
Wow.
Fixed.
Fixed the new post.
It's a little early for that. That's a little rush to judgment there, Vic. I mean, we're talking about grading the draft class 3 years later,
Dime a dozen.
You're saying it's fixed.
Dime a dozen.
Oh, wow. My good.
I love the philosophy, though. I mean, the overall philosophy. Big guys first, okay, early and often. Okay, then you go to the premium position next, and that's corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, then you get the skill position, wide receivers and running backs. I love it.
Well, the only thing left to talk about, the only person left to talk about is the running back from Liberty, or have you already gotten to them while I was down doing TV?
We didn't talk about him.
We didn't talk about him?
No.
I didn't tell you the story about...
We were talking before the show began about
him. Oh, is that what it was?
And I'll set it up that I went over to the Senior Bowl this year and walked out onto the field, and the first guy that I noticed was Jennings. I didn't know where he was from. The helmet was unfamiliar to mm-hmm. me. But you see a big guy, big as Beanie Wells now, 6'1", mm-hmm. 237, mm-hmm. running fast, and you think, who is that?
He was, if you want to see him against top competition, go to his freshman year at Pitt. He played well against Notre Dame and West Virginia. He was, by the end of the year, he was their feature back. He had a bright future there. And then he went to the head coach, Dave Wannstedt, and told him that his father was in declining health. His father had diabetes, and his father was going to lose a leg to diabetes. And Rashad Jennings wanted to go home to help his father. Wannstedt released him from his commitment, which meant that he lost no eligibility. He then went on to have 3 great years at Liberty. And the only setback from it is that he lost a lot of money. If he had turned in those kinds of numbers at Pitt in major college football against major college competition, he would have been probably a first day pick. I mean, he's 6'1", he's 237, and what does he run? He's a 4.5 guy.
Yeah, right around there. I saw 4.49 on him.
Faster than Knowshon Moreno.
Right
at that size, so he would have been. Probably would have, and he's got good hands. I saw him. I saw him as a freshman. I saw him catch the ball. So he would have been. He would have been a first day pick. He lost a lot of money, but he's going to get the opportunity to play in the National Football League. And the great thing is that this is a great story about a father and son relationship. And
he could
that goes to your character.
And he couldn't have asked for a better team to go to.
Well, look at him here. Do you see this? This is on a wet field.
And if you're a running back, to come to a team that just lost, you know, a Hall of Fame type guy needs another back to help carry the load.
And it has Kennedy Pola as their running backs coach.
Oh.
The only negative I'll give you on him is, remembering him from his freshman year, he's not what you call, he doesn't burst out of the stance. He's a little bit of a...
Build-the-speed guy, maybe?
Build-the-speed guy, that's what they call it. Now he's going to have to change. He's
going
to have to change
that. Eddie
George
was a build-the-speed guy.
Eddie George was clearly a build-the-speed guy.
He did just fine.
Matt Jones was a build-a-speed guy.
He didn't do just fine.
Hey, real quick, in the 4 or 5 minutes that we have left, let's touch on the division, and we'll go to Houston. And the biggest addition that they had was in the first round, Brian Cushing, the linebacker from SC. They took Connor Barwin, a defensive end from Cincy that I know that you thought something of.
Mike McCrary.
Okay, so, wow. That's more than thinking something of.
Effort
that's
guy.
Praise. Yeah.
In other words, just keeps coming and coming and coming. That's how he was described to me by somebody else.
All right, so thoughts on the Houston Texans draft?
Real good. You know, the only thing about Cushing is he doesn't look natural. You know,
You wonder what I mean. Yeah, no.
Well, I mean,
there's pictures all over the internet.
Yeah, I mean, there have been terrible accusations.
You're talking about the Tony Mandarich type.
Right. There are accusations, big-time accusations of steroids use. So, you know, I don't know. Is he as good as he appears to be? Because he was a killer at Southern Cal.
Right.
They got better on defense. After that, just okay. The one that stays strong from beginning to end is the Titans draft. That's a scout's draft. That's a general manager's draft. They just kept taking best available player. They got a linebacker in a fourth round from Southern Miss, Gerald McGrath. He's just a perfect Jeff Fisher kind of player. He'll step right in. He's a Bullock kind of guy. Indianapolis, Donald Brown's a perfect Colts kind of back. Do it all. He'll catch it, and he'll do it. He's a finesse kind of back. He's not a pounder.
They giving up on the kid from LSU? Is that what they're saying here? Or
there's something they don't like about him.
I don't get that. I mean, Joseph Addai has been a very good back.
He didn't play hurt.
And he didn't play a whole lot the second half of last season. Down the stretch, he was on the sidelines, and Dominique Rhodes was on the field a whole lot more.
Boy, did they need their second-round pick, though. Woo! The big defensive tackle.
But it's a reach. It's a reach. They should have taken Ziggy Hood in round one, and they might have been able to get – that would have pushed Donald Brown down. They might – you know, who knows? They might have been able to come up and get LeSean McCoy at the bottom of round two. They just missed on him. But Philly Maiola – Maiola?
Maiola?
Yeah.
The USC guy.
That's a reach for him, and there are character concerns with him. He's not a Colts kind of guy.
Well, and that's strange, because when you talk to people about the way that the Colts draft and Bill Polian, they always mention that he gets the Colt-type player almost
Ziggy
every
Hood
time.
Was perfect for him. High-character guy and a quick guy, a penetration guy. You know, not a mauler, a guy that's going to beat somebody off the ball and get into the backfield and disrupt.
Watch him all his highlight tape, though.
Yeah.
That guy can play.
Well, you know, I mean, almost all those USC guys. Patrick Turner, that big receiver.
Look who's playing around him, though. I know that.
But, you know, the old saying, it starts up front. I mean, you got three drafted linebackers.
Yeah.
What's in front of them?
They weren't double-teaming him.
No, it's the old thing that there was a personnel guy that told me this one time. He said, we send you to a college university to look at a left tackle as a stud. What do you think? My thought was, who do you get the sack up to? Right? You know what I mean?
right, very good. All right, guys.
Thanks so much, Johnny. Good to see you downtown for once. Joe, always a pleasure. Have a great night, everybody. Mini camps this week and practice open 4 o'clock on both Friday and Saturday, 10:30 on Saturday morning as well. Have a great night.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, brought to you by North Florida's labor unions, such as the Association of Firefighters in Duval, Nassau, Clay, and St. John's Counties, and Community First Credit Union, the home of First Down Touchdown for teachers. Jaguars This Week is a presentation of the WOKV Jacksonville Jaguars Radio Network.